Good morning. This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And today we're talking about
World building help. Well, somebody on Reddit asked about, it was a brand new to world building and they wanted to world build, right? And he was asking for advice, any manuals that people knew about or advice they had about world building on where to start.
Can I give my advice?
I know what your advice is.
My advice is, why?
That's
Do
not
you
advice.
Want a world
That's
build?
A question.
There's so many worlds already built.
We'll go into that a little bit later. He was asking for advice and he was talking about books, manuals, and even just general advice on what to do and how to do it. Because he's really intent on doing it. So don't try to convince him that he shouldn't do it.
I wasn't going to. That was just my question in general for people, because I always hear people talking about world building and all the different things that go into it.
Yeah, he was generally asking where he should start, how much he should do, those kind of big general questions. And I was thinking about it. I go, well, where do you start, right? I mean, you could start small, big, create the world, name your world.
I think his specific question was homebrewing a world or...
Yeah, no, world building, how to make the world. How do you make the world that you're going to play in, that he's going to run because he's a GM?
So if you feel the need to make a world because you're not happy with whatever world you're playing in currently...
Right.
Then, okay.
So you got to start somewhere. And I think the first thing, I think it depends on the game, right? I was thinking about how different games need different types of world building. For example, some games need a lot. Let's say, for example, D&D 5th Edition or Champions or hero games. Because a lot of it depends on the GM knowing what's out there for the characters to encounter, right? Like what's going on in the world, sort of thing. And so they're gonna have to do a little bit more world building to be able to run that campaign.
So they're gonna need to do world building,
yeah,
to run the campaign
a little bit more than let's say, for example, you have D&D game, right?
If you want to world build in a world, like, so you're saying that if you're running a 5th edition game, but you don't like, Forgotten Realms, and you don't want to switch to one of the other worlds that have already been built.
There's a lot of worlds out there.
But you have to come up with all the information.
No, you don't.
Who's in the world?
Well, not all the information. You don't have to build the world, but you should have something built or something in mind as to where the characters are going to be, where they can explore, what they're going to find in different places.
So see, I wouldn't want, I would take a really easy route there and go, okay, Waterdeep. The city isn't called Waterdeep, it's called something else, right? I don't know.
You really have a problem with people.
I really have a problem with the world building thing, because there's so many things already built. But I understand. So you're saying they have to come up with the cities, the terrains.
Right.
Or make a map, right?
Or where they're going to explore or what they're going to do. And because it's combat heavy, like hero games are combat heavy, D&D is combat heavy, you got to have things for them to fight or encounters for them to fight along the way. Even if your D&D game is mainly about exploring or about community building or whatever it is, sooner or later, combat is going to get involved because it's centered around combat. So in those kind of games, you're going to need stuff for them to do, stuff to them for the players to go against.
But that's normal, right? There's, when you're creating your campaign or your one-shot game, there's going to be, you're coming up with what they're doing or giving them something to do, right?
Right. Usually there are encounters, right? If you look at most campaigns or adventures published, you'll find that there's encounters in every book. There's no doubt about it. That's all there is.
That's not really world building, right? The world building part is where the cities are, where the what the gods are, what the peoples are.
Right, right. And because of that, because it's D&D and it's because it's combat heavy and people tend to move around, then you have to do a little bit of world building. If you were playing, Pride and Prejudice game, right? Let's say a Jane Austen game, where everything takes place in a manor, there's not a whole lot of world building going on.
Although you would need to have the city and the... you have to have a... Because they have to leave the manor. They can't just stay in the manor the whole time. They might want to go to town.
Yeah, but the town could be...
Well, you would use the name of whatever town you're setting your manor next to.
Right.
Which would involve taking a map of England and picking something, or making your own town.
Well, I mean, you could use you could use real places.
You couldn't call it a Jane Austen thing unless you were. I mean, you could say it's Jane Austen like.
Okay.
If you don't pick a town.
That's what I was saying.
In the Jane Austen-like city or system or books.
Right. Oh, Jane Austen inspired. Role-playing game. Okay, so you would need the manor where things take place, maybe the city, maybe a large area where a ball takes place, but usually that takes place in the manor too, right? Or some rich person's huge house.
Well, see, that's the thing. If they might be giving the ball, but then maybe so-and-so on their estate is giving the ball, so you have to
have they'll have a picnic or something or a...
Yeah.
Whatever, day outside. I don't know what they do in Jane Austen novels. But I'm
same
learning.
Same thing in the Bridgerton novels. Yes. Or Bridgerton series that you're watching.
Right, right. And that's what I got. Is if you play a lighter game, let's say Tales from the Loop, there's a lot less world building, right? You don't need to create. All you need to create in that sense is just a town, a loop, and where the loop is, the loop.
But is that world building?
No, but it is, sort of. It's the world that the players are going to be playing in.
So in Tales from the Loop, its setting is what, Sweden?
The natural setting is, there's a in the book, there's a town in Sweden,
mm-hmm.
and there's a Nevada City.
Nevada City, which is
in Nevada.
In Nevada, or, well, Nevada City is technically in California, but.
I have no idea.
Anyway, so when you ran it, you just switched it to Monterey.
Yes.
That's not really... I might be confused on the term world building.
The world that you're going to play in.
Because you're playing the Tales from the Loop game.
Yes.
And you're using that world, but you just switched it to a different city. So that's not really world building. That's just placing it in a different place. And I'm not sure what we're talking about if you're saying that's world building.
Well, world building is creating the area that the players are going to play in.
Okay.
So because in Tales of the Loop, you're playing kids and you don't normally travel 60 miles to the big city. You could, but usually it's not very likely. Everything takes place in the little town or the small city that you reside in. And you solve mysteries, and that's what you do. And so you don't need to create this world, the whole world. You don't have to create a whole continent. In Tales from the Loop, you don't have to even create the state. You just create or reimagine a town that has a loop. And then you got to figure out, well, what is the loop going to do to that town, or how is the town going to function? Other than the way, if you're using a real town, like let's say I use my hometown or the county of Monterey because the loop was really large. And I wanted to include... Salinas, and I want to include Monterey. But what I did was I made those locations a little bit closer together, so the kid could actually travel from Monterey to Salinas and like Moss Landing, and it wouldn't be such a arduous task. Like it would take, I mean, if you were to bike from Salinas to Monterey on a bicycle, it'd probably take you quite a while, right? Or to from Salinas to Watsonville or to Moss Landing. So I made it a little bit smaller, you know, all those. One, I made a town smaller, less population, and I made it kind of squished together the county, so everything was closer together. So it was indeed possible for you to bike from Salinas to Monterey in, let's say, just a couple hours.
Okay.
So that to me is world building, right? That to me is changing, even if you're using a real place, you're changing the environment to suit the game. Now, if I was going to use, let's say, Monterey County for a Shadowrun game, I wouldn't even have to move the towns or the too close together, because people have cars and people have, they could probably have planes. Heck, some street samurai could probably run faster enough to than a car from one town to another. And they would probably, they may leave that area, so they would have to world build more. Like, what's the next city over? What's the next big city over?
But in a game like Shadowrun, you don't really have to world build anything, because they have all different kinds of cities. You can go from Seattle to Chicago.
Yeah, you're right. Shadowrun does have its own.
And you could go to world. Yeah. So you don't need Shadowrun. It would be really hard to world build.
Okay,
right?
So let's eliminate the world. The nickname Shadowrun. How about?
I'm fine. I'm just telling you that I don't think you need to do it. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think you have to do it. That's all. Because there's so much stuff already written for that.
But if there wasn't stuff already written, or you didn't like what it was written, that's why.
I understand. I understand what you're saying. I'm just.
And then C, I put down like Dresden Files, or the original Dresden Files, the 2-book set, where you actually build the city that you're gonna play in with the players.
Like, oh, we never did that when you.
Well, because I knew you guys weren't into world building, right? So city building in this case.
You gave us a city that we knew.
Right, and then I just changed things a little bit. Again, I did world build a little bit. Again, I made the towns a little bit closer together, so there wasn't being so much lag time between, specifically Monterey and Salinas. Monterey and Salinas are about 25 minutes away from each other, depending on traffic. But I made them like 10 miles away from each other, so it would be closer to go from one place to another, just for expediency. And then the Quiet Year is exactly the same thing. In that case, it's almost it is a GM-less game, where people make a map of their community and what's, like, this is where our settlement is, what's next to the settlement, what's to the east, what's to the north, what's to the west, and then you make the world together.
So that's literally a game where you're world-building together.
Yes, but it's a very small area you're world-building. You're only worried about your community and what's around it.
Yeah.
You're not worried about the continent over, or, you know, about, because you're not going to go anywhere.
You don't have to come up with a history.
Well, you might come up with a history, but it doesn't matter in that game. You're just worried about the next you're trying to live.
Yes, but I was saying you don't have to come up with a history, because you're talking about world building.
Yes, yes. So there's different games, and I think there's different needs of world building for a GM to do, depending on the game. I know you're still not convinced of why people do it, but trust me, there's plenty of people who do it. So, actual books and manuals on world building. There's one called The Ultimate RPG GM's World Building Guide. Now, this is by James D'Amato. It's really well written, right? And what it does, it starts off very small. It talks about prompts and stuff like that. And this book is pretty good, because it covers everything, like not every genre, but the main genres, like science fiction, fantasy, cyberpunk, right? So it covers big swaths of games that people play, very popular ones. And, you know, this is a pretty good, pretty hefty book at 272 pages. And what it does, it gives you prompts like, what kind of adventures are you going to run in your world? And so you answer these questions. And when you answer these questions, you're actually world building your world. So by the time you go through most of the book, you've already created a world that you want your players to play in. So I think it's pretty good. It's available on, it's a real book. You go to Barnes & Noble, buy the book. I'm not sure if it's available as a PDF.
You might want to check if it's actually at Barnes & Noble before you go.
Well, I know it's available on Amazon, and it's a real book. Like, it's not an ebook.
Then it's probably available on BarnesandNoble.com, yeah, too.
Right.
Or other books.
I mean, I think it's a series of books, you know, the Ultimate Guide for RPGs. There's Ultimate Guide to Making Maps and stuff like that. And I have seen those at Barnes & Noble. So there you go. So this is pretty good if you're specifically doing something for a real guide, a real manual on world building. Another set of books, I think this is more like a set of books, is done by Expeditious Retreat, which I know these books are on DriveThruRPG, because Expeditious Retreat is a small publisher. But I'm sure they may have a POD, or print on demand. I'm not sure, but I know they have the PDFs. And these are like a series of books. It's not just one book. So there's World Building, and it's broken up into like Western Europe, the ecology and society, and the Silk Road. So like the ecology and society talks about geography, about stuff like that in world building, cultural and how to societies form and how you would do that in your game that you want to build.
It seems like a lot of work.
Yeah. And then of course they have the Western Europe, which is basically a medieval world, much like Western Europe. And the typical, atypical fantasy type of setting. Now, this is written for 3.xx. It was mainly written for 3.xx D&D. Now, 3.xx is 3.0 to 3.5. And you could probably throw Pathfinder in there. I mean, Pathfinder.
Everybody does.
First edition Pathfinder is like, they call it jokingly 3.75. I've looked at the world building Western Europe, and you could use it. I mean, there's some rules in it about D&D 3rd edition, but for the most part, you could still use it for any kind of world building of a medieval Western world, European world. I think it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat. Expedition Retreat, they're really good at writing. I really like it. I really like that one book. I haven't read the other ones, but like the Silk Road is about travel routes and how that influences society. So I think that's pretty interesting.
You mean all roads lead to Rome?
Well, I think the Silk Road refers to like the Spice Road.
Yes, I know.
In India or something like that. I don't know too much about that that part of history. The writers in this book talk about how that might influence the town that you put around this, on these trade routes. Very interesting, it seems to me. But like I said, I don't have any time to world build myself. So I just got the first book on PDF, and it's pretty cool.
Did you read it? Or did you just?
I remember I got it. I got it as a charity bundle, and so I got the book, and then I looked at it. I didn't like read through it the whole thing, but when I was doing this, I looked at it a little bit more. It was pretty good. It's a pretty good book. Pretty well written. Next is Phalanx Games. Now this guy is by this guy. These set of books is by Phil McGregor, and I kickstarted the series of books that he did. But his idea is a realistic fantasy world. Low magic, of course. But he wanted to be real. If you wanted a realistic one. And the first book is called Orbis Mundi 2. Well, he has a first book, but he redid it again. And it's called Orbis Mundi 2. It's a fantasy Europe. And another book is Fantasy Europe, and then another book is called The Marketplace. And what it really does is a good job of the historical, it gives you historical information about medieval Europe, how things actually worked. Now, it really gets in the weeds, right? It talks about manors and how manors were supported, and it talks about the...
So it was what I studied to get my master's degree in history.
Monetization and how monetization worked and how medieval Europe actually worked, how you couldn't have a business or you couldn't have a farm unless the king or the duke granted you a writ to be able to do that stuff. And everything had to have a contract because it's just the way things were. And how you didn't own anything but were given permission to do things by the lord and blah, blah, blah. And it could, like I said, you could get deep in the woods and with details. I think if you're going to build a fantasy world, I think this kind of stuff you might want to look at and take a look and see how things really worked. Instead of just hand-waving things like, well, gold grows on trees, so you don't have to worry about how finding gold mine might change the economy.
I was just going to say, isn't there a game called Pendragon that does that, but they play fast and loose with history? Because it's an Arthurian.
Well, remember, Pendragon deals with...
Arthurian legend.
Yeah, but a specific along the lines of... called the Death of Arthur. He was... I forgot his name. It's based on that fantasy mold. Other yes. people have written about King Arthur, but in this case, it's definitely about Sir Thomas Malory. That's yeah, what it is. So in Sir Thomas Malory's book, he doesn't really care about money. So in Pendragon, you don't care about money, right? You are a knight, and
that's what I'm saying. It's based on medieval stuff.
Yes,
but they play a little fast with the actual history.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Which always freaks me out, but I understand.
Right. And then I have a book. Now, this one is kind of comes at world building from a different angle because it's for writers. So this book is really a workbook. It's called
The other book that you were talking about is?
The next book is called The Only World Building Book You Will Ever Need. It's written, I forget who the writer is, but it's a lady who deals with book writing for scripts, that kind of writing, not necessarily for RPGs. But I thought it was interesting because the book is an actual workbook. It has like a prompt and it says write something, and it literally gives you lines to write in, and it asks you to describe stuff, and it gives you just page to page that you can just write stuff into this workbook. It literally is like the old grammar school workbook where you write in this book, and at the end of the book, you have built a world with different elements of what you need for writing, and which is basically what you're doing when you are world building for a fantasy game or a role playing game.
Okay.
So I thought it was interesting. I thought when I got the PDF, it asked questions that other games don't, like it may seem unnecessary because they're really trying to get into character development and how that might influence the characters and what would influence the characters and stuff like that of your novel or screenplay. And I thought it was just a different angle to come from than the other manuals that I saw out there about world building for RPGs.
Okay.
It clocks in at 172 pages, so like 100 pages less than the ultimate guide. But I thought it was pretty good. I mean,
this one is the only guide?
The only one you'll ever need.
I see.
Which I know sounds kind of presumptuous, but there's a lot of space in there for you to write your ideas in. And I think that is kind of important. That way you have this book. It looks like a book. I mean, it looks it's a book that you write in. And so once you finish, it's there, and you won't have, sometimes people write in notebooks.
I know you probably already know this, Saul, but for writers, that's prompts are like what they live with, right? There's all kinds of books that give them prompts to help you with
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've never written a book, so I don't know. I never tried. Didn't
you, when you took English in college, did it?
English in college? I never took English in college.
Whatever.
Did I take English in college? I must have, right?
You had to. I know you took one at San Jose State.
An English class?
Yeah.
No. English 100 or something.
Yeah, everybody had to.
Yeah, but that was just, that one just told me how to use the library. Seriously, that's what it was about.
It was about other things too.
No.
You just weren't paying attention.
No. This was all about how to, and let me tell you, this, in the old days.
That was the old days too, when you had to go and figure out how to use a microfiche machine.
And we still had a card catalog.
No, they were switching to, yes. they had the card catalog, but they didn't use it anymore.
Oh, that's true. You're right. And she was very mad about that. She was extremely mad about it. And what?
I'm sure she used Turabian styles.
Yes. Yes. But what was interesting is, I mean, I understand, she seemed kind of like a Luddite, if you think about it. Like, she was really upset that they were going from the card catalog to the online. Yes, that's right. At San Jose State, 1994, 1995, they had gotten rid of the card catalog and gone to the online one. And I can imagine these ugly big monitors when you had this beautiful card catalog. And what's funny was that she this how deep she really didn't like the idea of switching to the online catalog was that she went and found five of her favorite books. And she took the cards out of it and she kept them in her pocket.
That was to help teach you before they got rid of the cards.
Yeah, but I thought it was very, before everything went online, me and my class, what I meant by my class, her work, her questions, and we had to do stuff, right? Find this, find that. Let me tell you, after that class, though, I could go to any library and research and find anything on anything that I needed to find, because she was...
Which is why the class was there. So this book about English prompts, which was what we were talking about.
Yes, English prompts.
They have that. There's all kinds of books like that for if you want to write, be a creative writer, if you're trying to write a nonfiction, they give you the prompts to tell you what to do. So that book, This Is the Only Book That You'll Ever Need,
right,
is the way that a lot of writers, the prompts help them to go with their stuff. To figure out what they're writing, right?
Right, to spark the elements of...
Not only that, but to have them practice.
Right, Which I didn't know. I don't know. I've never dared write.
And
I
did take your idea about that from that book about asking questions. Yeah. When I was looking up this topic on this one, I found there was this one guy on Reddit talking about how you should always ask why for everything that you want to put into your world. Uh-huh. If you want to have orcs in your world, why do you want orcs in your world?
Yes.
And I'm like, Wayne, I think in my brain, I'm thinking, well, the more appropriate question is, where are the orcs? And why do you need a history for them and all that kind of stuff? If you want to world build it, which I don't know if my definition of world building is the same as yours, but that seems like a lot of work.
At the very end of all my notes here, I have, why world build?
That was my question.
It's Jolene's question, and she says she would never do it because there's 100 already made, ready to put in your...
There's already so many worlds.
To put into your game system and run. And I think I was talking to Jolene here last night, and our friend is staying here, and he was saying creativity, right? That was what he said, and I think that's true. I think there's three reasons. There's probably more, but I mean, I know there's more. But creativity, one, that they just want to create something, and they want to just do it. Like almost every GM that I know has had toyed with the possibility of creating their own world, simply because for whatever reason, Faerun, Greyhawk, the planet Mars, whatever, just doesn't do or fit or work for them as far as a play setting for their game. So they world build, right? So they want to create the world, whether it's a universe, whether it's a solar system, whatever. So I think that's just an element of a RPG game master's
desire to be a writer.
Desire to be a writer and just want to create something that, oh, this is mine. This is my own stuff.
Well, just so you know, as you're creating each campaign, unless you're taking it out of a book, which obviously if you're considering that you want to be creative, you wouldn't be doing that. You would be being creative. So there you go.
Second, I think it's control, right? Because if there's a world out there, like let's say Forgotten Realms, I'm running the game in Forgotten Realms.
Now this one I can see. The person doesn't like the way that certain races or peoples in the world, orcs, say, for they want you to like the orcs or something, right? They don't like the fact that the orcs are the bad guys, right? They want to change it.
Well, there's that, but there's also like levels of knowledge, right? There's like you're put in Forgotten Realms, and I say, oh, you know, you start on in Khmer, but you end up in Waterdeep. And maybe I haven't read about Waterdeep that much, right? But somebody else has read novels about Waterdeep, has read the actual, has the Waterdeep setting campaign guide and all this other stuff. And I as GM, say, well, blah, blah, blah. Something important.
That's
somebody,
not the way that it is in
exactly.
Waterdeep.
Exactly. Hold on. That dock is not near that inn because in blah, 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 it says that this is where it really is. And there you get these people who will challenge you as to where you put your inn or your, if there's a guild of thieves or if there's a guild of blacksmiths, whatever. And that could be frustrating. And I know people can easily solve this by saying, well, that's normal Waterdeep, but this is my Waterdeep. And you can make those kind of things. Don't assume that whatever is written down is whatever I'm going with. But to avoid all that, an easy way is just to make your own world. And
or just get a map of Waterdeep out of a book and say, this is the Waterdeep we're using.
Well, or or if you change something in the past or something like certain characters that may or may not exist at the time, whatever. But there's always going to be some player. There's always going to be some.
Well, in Waterdeep, too, because the Lords of Waterdeep are secret. It doesn't matter, right? You can make your Waterdeep however you want.
Yeah, maybe that was a mistake.
You just wink at the player and say, you know.
But what I'm saying is to avoid that. A lot of GMs don't like that. They don't like to be challenged about knowledge about the world, especially if a player has more knowledge than you. And that sucks.
I can see that you shouldn't worry about it, right?
You shouldn't.
But if it really bothers you, then...
I mean, you could have the talk with all the players saying, well, this is Forgotten Realms. I know some of you really know Forgotten Realms. And if I make something that's different, this is my Forgotten Realms, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but still, there's going to be... Are you sure that's what you want to do? Because like in the real Forgotten Realms...
Well, then, this is one, the player shouldn't be doing that. We've talked about this before, that what you do it outside of the game... Or something, right?
Well, players, you know, sometimes they get, they forget about the social contract.
Well, I think that's a silly reason to world build, because you're upset that the players have different knowledge or want to use their knowledge against you.
Or let's say you don't want players knowing about stuff because that character wouldn't know stuff, and players sometimes have a difficulty separating player knowledge from character knowledge.
And so you could just say, does your character know that, or are you bringing that in from your brain?
Yeah, it's so much easier just to create your own world, and that where the player have no clue as to what's going on, except what you tell them.
Okay, if you say so.
Next is possible publication. Now, every GM, a creative player out there, thinks that, wow, I'm so smart, I'm so creative, that I could possibly publish this adventure, this world. And I think in the back of their mind, people think, well, if I could just hone it down or get an editor, edit this, give it to my wife so she can read it over.
Don't give it to your wife, please.
Or brother or whatever. Just read this little adventure. What do you think about my idea for this city, for this setting?
Everybody has somebody in their life who can be their editor. When I did my master's thesis, I had my brother, and he did it, and he was hard on me, but that's what you need when you have an editor. So just if you're planning on doing that, know that they're gonna say, this is wrong, why did you put this here,
say terrible things about your writing.
They're gonna yeah, but that's what an editor is for, so you can't take it personally. So all of you creative people out there who want to build your own world, if you're planning on publishing it, definitely get an editor.
Well, my editor would never do that to me.
Oh, yeah, he would.
Bae, you're not allowed to do that to me.
Just say no, Bae.
He's already said it. He's my editor for life.
I don't believe he said that at all.
I think he did. And he's free, by the way.
I don't believe that either.
Anyway, so I think that's possibly a reason for people to want to write things down and build their own world or build their own setting. And now in the age of self-publication with print on demand and different places like DriveThruRPG and Lulu being able to send them your PDF and they'll make it into a book and they could put it on their website and you can try to sell it. I think it's very viable that is also a reason why people want to world build. Just is. I mean, you laugh, but...
I'm only laughing because Saul has portrayed me, and I may have portrayed myself as not coming off as a fan of world building.
You're not a fan of world building.
But
you wouldn't.
The reason I'm not a fan of world building is I think it's a lot of work.
Well, and yes, yes.
Since there's other stuff out there, and I do a lot of things, if I'm going to run a game, I don't need the pressure to create the world too. I'm just going to pick something that I already have.
Yeah, that is definitely an easier thing to do, and there's no doubt about that.
I understand people like to do it, and I can see the creativity and stuff, but I just want to make sure that everyone understands if that's your thing, go for it. It's just not my personal thing.
So Felipe made his own world. He called it Cardoza.
Yeah.
And we played in that AD&D for years and years. And he at the time had the World of Greyhawk available. We should ask him why he decided to make his own world.
You can ask him all you want. I'm sure he'll tell you.
And why he decided. But I think everybody, like I said, most GMs or most people who have been playing role-playing games, they get that itch to create something.
Well, that's why they create campaigns.
Possibility of maybe one day being a writer and getting it published. And now, like I said, with the advent of self-publishing and different places, you can make your dreams come true, Jolene.
So hopefully Saul has inspired you to, or not to, it's up to you.
Get some help.
So there you go. This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene.
And you have a good day.